come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Welcome back, ladies and germs, to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast. Every Saturday, we watch a movie and then we talk about it for your edification and listening pleasure. Tonight, I give you the abbreviated Saturday Night Freak Show starting lineup.
Sean.
And Travis.
And I'm Colin. And tonight, we watch Travis's movie. Travis, what do we watch tonight?
John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness.
From the year?
1994.
95, I think.
All right.
Four or five.
I want to say four or five.
Four or five.
So, this is the, like, I don't know what number movie this is that John Carpenter made. John Carpenter is an established brand at this point. It's funny, Travis. John Carpenter is one of my favorite directors, and I have yet to actually pick one of his movies on this show. H.P. Lovecraft.
Is this the first?
Who did they live?
Gary did.
Oh, Gary. Oh, really?
And H.P. Lovecraft is one of my favorite authors.
Yet to pick something inspired by H.P. Lovecraft. I doubt
that. Who picked Reanimator? I think maybe that was me.
I think you did.
So. Okay.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, there we go.
I got one for two.
I mean, that's why I picked this movie is because I don't think there's been anything in horror that, like, Lovecraft to me just, I don't know, almost put a period at the end of horror, right? Like, I mean, horror was always, you know, focusing on, you know, death and guilt of murder, la, la, la. But then Lovecraft just took it to this whole new level of this cosmic horror. He went
more
into
fiction.
The psyche. Well, but just in what horror does to you, not necessarily like, oh, my God, somebody with a knife stabbing me. It's more like I saw someone stab somebody with a knife. And it kept me up for hours.
Yeah,
and like
Edgar Allan Poe did
about,
that, yeah?
Did he? I don't know.
I mean, his stuff is all about how, probably. I mean, like, the guy from the Telltale Heart almost goes crazy.
But Lovecraft really took what I would almost consider a religious aspect to it, right? Like, this idea that things on this earth could be so old and so ancient that and we come from them that were somehow psychically linked to these things and... And they're so horrible and so, like, monstrous that just the
look at
just
one,
the look
would,
at
drive
one would drive
insane.
You insane, you know, because, yeah, you've never seen anything like this. And this movie, to me, is the first time, like, we've seen lots of people try to do Lovecraft, even though Reanimator is probably the best Lovecraft adaptation, I want to say.
There's one I want to show on this at some point. It's called The Resurrected, which is a pretty, Dan O'Bannon did a stab at it. It's a pretty decent, but it doesn't deal with the cosmic horror of Lovecraft. Like this. I haven't seen anything do, you know, the I mean, basically, it's the Cthulhu mythos, right? I mean,
basically,
like, I mean, kind of. Well,
we talked
story-
about how in you know, the title, In the Mouth of Madness, is kind of a nod to At the Mountains of Madness.
Which is the story where Lovecraft lays out kind of the,
his,
you know,
mythology
how,
or whatever.
Yeah, there's like Call of Cthulhu and At the Mountains of Madness. Lay that out, that we were grown from, you know. And there's, so I guess what? The Cthulhu mythos, for those of you who don't know this, is that there are beings who came from space to the Earth eons ago, ancient eons, and populated the planet and were driven under the surface or out into the nether regions by some type of black magic war that they had. And they've been waiting throughout the century, sleeping and waiting for the stars to line up so they can
also,
get back.
They also
into
go out
reality.
Of phase. They go out of phase with reality as well. They, you know, this is why they're kind of a weird. This is why I mentioned that they're kind of like, I don't want to say a god type of, but it is in a weird way. It's kind
they
of
have cultists that worship them. Yeah,
the idea that mankind is so microcosmic that you know we're nothing compared to the vast reaches of space and blah and reality and whatnot.
Stephen King, I think, described it once when he was doing he was writing about Lovecraft. He said that the impression you get is that if one of Lovecraft's gods was to shrug its shoulders, it would destroy the entire, you know, the planet Earth and, you know, destroy mankind.
Yeah, there's a weight to that idea. It's just like, Jesus Christ. I remember when I first saw Neverending Story for the first time and they talked about the nothing. You know, I mean, that was the first time I ever had a concept of, like, nothing. You mean no heaven? No, like, there's no afterlife. Like, you would just blip out, right? Mm. And then just, like, that's, like, where cosmic horror in a weird way started for me. But this movie, really helped that along. Even before I read Lovecraft, I saw this movie before I even touched Lovecraft. So I knew Lovecraft was for me. You know, when I saw this movie, I'm like, what?
Well, that was the thing, though, because we were talking during the movie earlier that it never acknowledges H.P. Lovecraft in any of the credits. So no. How did you know that it was?
The imagery kind of lends itself to that.
You know what Cthulhu is, and then you see things with tentacles
coming out of the face and whatnot.
Yeah, you just kind of put two and two together that's where this thing comes from. Right.
And most of the stuff in this movie seems to be based off of Stephen King, obviously. And Stephen King's, a lot of influences of his come from Lovecraft and whatnot.
Yeah.
Because that's what it looked like to me, like watching this movie.
Yeah, this movie has a horror, it's about a horror author named Sutter Kane. And it's a good Stephen King,
He outsells Stephen King.
Yeah,
he's
that's
so
a good
popular.
Line in this. Like, even though you somehow, forget about Stephen King, Kane outsells them all.
But somehow our protagonist, John Trent, the insurance investigator, has never heard of him.
Well, because he doesn't read.
Yeah. Right.
He just doesn't read. He's dealing with the real world. Tape?
Even if you don't read Stephen King.
Well, but that's what I like about this character. John Trent, played by Sam Neill from Jurassic Park.
Proof that you can go crazy just by reading it because he's never read it before. Like, he's kind of like a... the outside viewer who's never heard of it, who reads it and does go crazy.
He only deals with reality. He deals with facts. This doesn't seem to be a guy that spends much time in the fantasy realm, right?
Perfect person to happen to.
Yeah.
And so...
Well, Kane, I guess, has been, to tie this into with our, how we were starting this, Kane has been, this is revealed later in the movie, but you've seen this, haven't you, listener? You've seen it. So Kane has been in contact with, somehow subconsciously been influenced by the elder gods.
The old ones.
Yeah. And through his writings, they're attempting to change the fabric of reality and allow them to re-enter.
But the movie really starts from the point of just the idea of what can violent media do to our culture. That's kind of like where it starts, because... should we start at the insane asylum or should we just
say what you were saying?
Just off the bat, it lets you know that, like, Sutter Kane, the new horror novel, and it talks about there's all these riots at bookstores because they don't supply enough copy and, like, people are, they just can't wait for In the Mouth of Madness. Yeah. And so you get this idea that this world... I mean, they're so fiction driven that it's starting to fuck up the populace, right? They're so like people clamor for fiction more than they care about one another, right? They want this fucking book,
Well, I guess along those themes, you were talking about it, the culpability of an author in creating violence in the people who consume his ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the work, which is interesting. So Wes Craven's New Nightmare came out like before or after this?
I'm going to say after. I don't know.
Around 94. It didn't come around the same time. Yeah, it was very close.
But I don't think this necessarily is talking about
You don't think they go
this,
after the same
thing? Not necessarily, because I really do think in a weird way, and we'll get to this later, I do think this is more about religion than it is necessarily about media in a weird way. Not necessarily, but... We'll get to that.
The only reason I'm drawing the comparison is because it seems, New Nightmare is about, do the people who make scary movies have any kind of
responsibility
for, like, violent, getting it into you're releasing this idea into the zeitgeist and then people are acting on it. And so, like, are you responsible for it? It's like, kind of what Wes Craven was dealing with there, where it seems like that is what John Carpenter kind of is dealing with here. It's like because his main character, not his main character, but the antagonist is an author who's also putting this idea into the public and then, inspiring mass killings and eventually changing the world through, this kind of negative.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I guess I'll lean more towards... But I don't know why.
I think
both themes
are in there.
Sure. They just definitely do it in a different way.
Well, to your point about the religion, I counted this time. There was three times that At one point, Sutter Kane, as three times that they mentioned the Bible. At one point, Sutter Kane says, more people read my work than read the Bible. He said something else. And then finally, when he actually finishes the book, he's like, come read the new Bible.
The new Bible. Because so it's about like, fiction becoming our new reality is what it is.
Or is it if like, I don't know.
Because
this is the blasphemous, right, to some people. But the idea that like something is only real if enough people believe in it. So he is kind of like, that's the religious angle. It's like, is it a criticism of religion? Belief.
Well, I don't know if
it's
it is.
It's replacing it
it's
with
just
a different thing in this
movie. In a weird way. But it is that replacement that I think is what it's talking about. It's like, because that's the, I mean, shit, we're talking so far into the movie, we won't even have time to.
No, but this is good stuff.
I mean, when Sutter Kane talks about how more people believe in my work than believe in the Bible.
Yeah.
I mean, he's talking about like, okay, you know what? Whatever you believe, you know, even if Jesus is pure fiction, what's the better reality? Believing in the fictional peaceful thing or loving the fictional violent thing? Right. Because that is really the choice. Whenever we sit down and watch a movie or sit, we have a choice. We're going to watch something that inspires positivity or we're going to watch something that inspires negativity. And you can't tell me that like movies and music, blah, blah. If movies and music can inspire happiness, they can inspire negativity and violence. And that's just a fact of life. And especially if the viewer doesn't have anything to gauge watching on. You know, if you show, dude, I got buddies that show their little 5-year-olds fucking Star Wars and they just want to start punching your balls when you walk into a room. It's fucking Christ, this kid. And Star Wars isn't seen as some violent adult movie, but it's, you know.
They shoot a lot of people in that movie.
It's just one of those things where if a kid just sees something hit, that's what they're going to do. So it's like, don't fucking tell me that what you watch and what you consume doesn't actually affect who you become as an adult. You know, I think it does. Right.
Because to that regard, like what is a kid doing but watching other people do things and reacting off of that?
And how, and
whether they watch it in real life or watch it on TV, like.
And not to get too fucking real in this conversation, but you're talking about we live in today's modern day. Of course, we live in today's
life. 2016.
I just mean we have a huge gun problem today. And we're like, why? Hey, let's go see that new movie about the fun hitman that's going to meet a girl. It's just like, that's fucking why. It's because we watch shit that romanticizes very violent fucking people. So why wouldn't people say, hey, man, I'm cool if I go shoot a fucking gun. I'm cool if I go kill people because movies really, really – I mean because movies think – you know, I get it. Movies – the fun of movies is, oh, you get to live that other life. Yeah, that
your
you,
identification. It's like your projecting.
Yeah. But if you raise a kid on that thinking like, hey, this is reality, you know, if a kid's just like – you know, it doesn't have anything, like I said, to gauge it against to, like, you know. I mean, shit, when we go to horror conventions, I can almost see. It's like we're the type that, like, we love horror movies. And then I call the others the gore hounds. They're the people the fucking violence. They don't care what movie they put in as long as it's got throat slits and it's like, okay, you know, the unintelligent, they don't see the art of the filmmaking, the editing, just to give somebody the feeling of fear through whatever storytelling. They just see, oh man, when he fucking guts that chick it's like, that's why it's like this fucking movie means a lot to me because of that.
I've had an experience and it'd be in a theater. It was for Devil's Rejects where there were kids in front of me like reacting in a way like, yeah, killer. It was just kind of like, Jesus Christ, what am I doing here? But this kind of goes to the responsibility or the culpability thing. And I know this is kind of an aside, but I was recently listening to a podcast. They were talking with Alex Aja, and he had remade Wes Craven's The Hills Have Eyes. Mm-hmm. And he said when they were doing that, there was a scene in the trailer during the rape scene where they were going to, you know, they kill the bird. And he was saying, well, we should amp it up. You know, this is a remake. We should do the, like, we kill a cat or put a cat in a microwave. And Wes Craven was like, you can't do that. And he was like, Aja was like, why? You know, it's like, you're Wes Craven. You did horrible, horrible shit like in the past. And Wes Craven was like, no, you can't do that because some kid out there will do it or somebody will do it. So the later day Wes Craven, this is post, you know, New Nightmare, but clearly this guy was wrestling with this, you know, throughout his life.
And it seems like,
it seems like Carpenter, I mean, again, Carpenter didn't write this. It was given to him by
Michael DeLuca,
who was the
head of. You said
production or development. Yeah.
Why you make me New Line, say you just New Line Cinema.
He's putting words in my mouth.
Yeah. So, I mean, so I don't know if he just like kind of, you know, it's like, here's a script and it's like, oh, I can kind of work this in there. Or if it was DeLuca had worked it in there and, you know, now we've got Carpenter making it. It's just, you know, the fact that the movie is such a metafiction movie where by the end of the movie, the main character is watching John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness. I mean, Carpenter is injected into the body of the film himself by name. You know?
This is all done in, just a great way, right? Just this, I don't know, to me, this story, like one day I got to track down this novel. You know, I think the novelization of this would be a really fun read, right? Because, I mean, that is In the Mouth of Madness. You know, that's the book you're supposed to read to, you know, to... This will bring on the change. You know, there's shit about this I fucking love. Just to me, this is the last classy horror movie. Like, I wish this movie was like in black and white. Like, I bet it would look better in black and white. But like, to me, it's the concept, it's the ideas that are driving the horror of this movie. I mean, I think what's lackluster about this movie are the actual, what tries to be scary in this movie.
The jump scares?
Just any of the scares, really. You're just like, this is fucking Yonsville, man.
All right,
like,
well, we have to ask Sean about this, because this is his first night.
First viewing
watching this movie. And we had the volume cranked up to 100.
Which you need to start this movie with the fucking heavy metal opening like all horror movies should have. Dude.
Yeah. Ugh.
Did I tell you this?
You said it was temped with.
Yeah, when he temped the movie, when he put it together, because this is one of the first things he did with an Avid, I think, or something like that. That, you know, Avid technology had come around. You can like, you know, have a version of it that night. And he said that he put together, or the editor, I think, put on a Metallica song. He didn't identify it. And he said when they showed it, you know, to this test screening thing, he could see people like, you know, moving, tapping.
It's exciting.
And so he's like, we should do something like that. So that was because Carpenter, of course, does the music to all of his movies.
Yeah, he did for this one too.
But did the jump scare sequences, which are, I mean, in horror, they're usually referred to as like, you know, the whatever bastard stepchild,
right?
The
cheap. Genre. They're cheap.
Yeah, yeah, because it's the loud. Something happens, lunges out of frame. Right.
Somebody up to the volume stinger for this scene, and then turn it back down for the
rest.
There's
quite a few of them in this movie.
There are a lot of them.
Because it's not a scary movie.
No, it's not a scary movie. It's more visually interesting to look at the stuff they put together. The jump scares. I think one of them was just like, oh, okay, that happened. Mm-hmm. Other than that, no, it's just like, you know, stuff. It's an. I mean, it's 94, but it's an older movie. Like, you can kind of feel. At a certain point, if you've seen enough of this stuff, you can kind of feel where they're going with things. Like, oh, something kind of feels like it should be coming out now. Like, you can almost feel them coming. You can sense, like, I mean, depending on how experienced we are with this, you can almost, like, the way they frame something can also give way to something coming out from somewhere. So, I mean, I think one of them was just like, oh, okay.
But this does
got
have
me.
The,
but other than that,
it does have the fun of, like, reality can break down at any second. That's any where, second. Like, even though it's not scary, I love when reality can just fucking bend, right?
Yeah, I love when she, like, the biker goes by her, and then later on it's like the old biker goes by. She's like, oh, I like that.
Yeah, because
that's cool.
It's before they get to the town. It's like, you know, so it's like,
let's set this up for those listening. John Trent, played by Sam Neill from Jurassic Park fame, plays, well, I said John Trent. Right? Who is a insurance fraud investigator. He's a dude that only relies on facts, and anybody who can think of anything's probably already done it. You know, like, he just doesn't buy into whatever. And he is tasked with finding the author, Sutter Kane, and the book he owes Arcane Publishing, led by Charlton Heston.
Charlton Heston.
He had a great character name, too. Was it Jackson Harglow?
Yeah, I was like, Harglow. Why isn't this called Harglow Publishing? Harglow Publishing sounds
awesome. Because
Arcane
is a riff on Arkham, you know, right, H.P. Lovecraft Publishing House.
Right. And so they have Sutter Kane, who makes all these crazy fucking books that drive you crazy, and they want that last one, damn it. He's contractually obligated to drive people crazy.
Yeah.
And so they hired him to track it down, but since he's an insurance fraud investigator, he's like, what's the angle? Is this guy really missing? You know, I don't believe it, you know?
Yeah, because he's not hired by that company, right? He's hired by Bernie Casey. The insurance
company.
Yeah, right.
That has to find out, like, does this guy have a claim? Right. Or is it a publicity? They're making a
claim that our author is missing, so we have a problem.
And they think they're doing that for, like, you know, to build up... you know, hype right. for awareness the book, for that them, people yeah. are already fucking out killing each other right. for, like, riding bookstores. Yeah. And so...
I think it's kind of brilliant the way he puts together, like, where the location is. Like, I like that. I'm just like, oh, it's in, like, this little, like, drawings on the books, on the covers of each book. Like, that's, and
what's
I like
real,
that.
What's really important is when Stiles, who's Sutter Kane's editor...
You know, she was the girl from Fright Night 2?
Was she?
Oh, was she the vampire?
Huh, crazy. Yeah. Crazy. What's her name? Yeah.
You're talking the original.
She's the vampire from Fright Night 2. Yeah.
Got her name.
But I like how, you know, she kind of spells it out that, like, you know, Sutter Kane's books have a tendency to affect its less stable readers.
The weaker minded.
You know, memory loss, hallucinations. I like Sam Neill says, people pay to feel that way. It's cute. That's a good line.
Yeah, he's got a very, like, deadpan. It is like the 40s noir detective, yeah. right?
Because well, he's so, well, he's yeah. so, what's the word I'm looking for? He's just.
Kiwi.
Ah, God damn it.
Well, he's he doesn't seen it all. He's,
yeah, he doesn't.
You know, he
yeah,
says
like he knows every I'm trick.
To think of the word.
So he knows every trick that everybody's trying to pull. He knows everything that everybody does. But
it's
does.
More than that too. It's like he's like, I think he says to her something like, not in this paraphrasing, but you know that human. Like I've seen. All of the worst shit of human nature. If you can think of it, people can do like, it.
We fucked up the earth. We fucked up the water. Or we fucked up the air. We fucked up the water. Why don't we just finish the job by flushing our brains down the toilet?
Yeah, he's a very cynical.
Cynical. Thank you, cynical goddamn.
Yes, thanks.
Cynical. Yeah. Fuck.
Very cynical.
But I like his reasoning or his little thing because she's like, you know, well, you know, it's like if he sees like the world is worth nothing. You know, what's the fucking point? And he's like, yeah, but think of the bright side. It gives you, you know, you're not, there's not a whole lot of kid that can disappoint you.
You know,
it's like,
you know, so he decides to read all Sutter Kane's books
right, for
whatever, any sort of, so that's kind of the idea that like, oh shit, he sat down and read the books that make people crazy and unstable. That you is know?
When he starts having the like, dreams, right?
He starts having hallucinations of.
Dream after dream.
Being in that
dream.
Alleyway, looking behind. That's I like that kind of thing in a movie or a horror movie, right? Where someone like kind of peeks behind something, but then they get distracted and they never finish it. And then you revisit that throughout the movie where they keep trying to peek. And so, yeah, those are his dreams. But he's also, you know, could be going crazy.
But we haven't talked about the cool scene in the diner.
Oh yeah, shit! Around,
right.
when he first finds out about the arcane insurance thing,
yeah, it's like a, it's set up like a classic John Carpenter scene, right? Because I mean, this is the stuff that Carpenter used to do when Dean Cundey was his cinematographer, and I think this goes to why this movie is so bright and you know its compositions are kind of clean and sterile, a lot of wide angles,
no Cundey vision in this one,
yeah, because he's got a different guy that he's been working with, you know, ever since. Dean Cundey guy.
Well, if you want to hear about it, that's all the commentary on the Blu-rays about. This all it is him and the lighting. All it is like, how'd you like that? How'd you get that? It's like, fuck, man. Well, because he didn't write it, so he's not really talking about themes or nothing. It's weird.
You know, I know, like, as the one movie commentary, it's like, it kind of sucks if, you know, you don't care about, like, the technical thing of how it's put together. But if you take all of John Carpenter's commentary tracks together, that guy has fucking film done film school. This is the lighting one.
Because this is the thing where, because John Carpenter's like, this is why I became a director, so I had to learn all this shit. Here's this guy that's going to tell you. He's like, what do we use on this? A whiting? It just sounds like John Carpenter doesn't know. And he's just like, did I see this movie? John Carpenter's in the mouth of me. I must have seen it.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, well, but it's a great commentary if you want to know the technicalities of this whole movie.
Yeah. Oh, when dude. I had it on Laserdisc, I listened to it.
How many Laserdiscs did you have?
Jesus. I had that like, many.
You must have had a yeah, crate full of these things.
Yeah. And then I sold them all to a pawn shop.
I've only seen Laserdisc in milk crates. Isn't that weird?
Well, it's like records, like the size of records. Yeah. They belong in milk crates. Yeah.
But the scene... is the public who we find out is the agent, literary agent. Later on, we find this out. The literary agent of Sutter Kane comes out of a bookstore and walks up to a diner where Bernie Casey and Sam Neill are sitting in a booth in the foreground, unaware of what's happening in the background. This guy's, you know, coming out with an axe. People are running, but the conversation between the two guys is still kind of going on, and they're just oblivious. And in this version,
did they cut away?
He cuts away like twice. He cuts in. Well, I mean, there's the cut-ins to
just each him, of right? the. Just there, the X-Man walking across the street. They just cut closer.
Well, they cut in on like the close-up, the dialogue close-ups of Sam Neill and Bernie Casey, I think, across the table. And then there's the wide shot, and then it cuts in for close-ups, I think, at least twice on the X-Man himself. And I'm like, 70s John like, Carpenter wouldn't have cut.
That would have been one shot.
And those two talking,
dude, him in the background.
It Follows is based on that whole, like, you know,
that's just that's exactly
we'll just
like
have just a walk.
Put him in the background and bring him here. Right?
Yeah.
It should have been Halloween.
Right? It's like John Carpenter.
But that's got to be modern day movie making. Like, you got to cut. Kids are going to get bored. You got to cut. You know, it's got to be modern day editing versus old school editing.
Or it's the new editor you got, too.
Right? Yeah, I'm sure. Like, no,
John,
3 to 7 seconds.
Here, right?
It's got to be 3 to 7 seconds. That's how commercials have trained humans to watch movies. 3 to 7 seconds.
Yeah, right.
But then, of course, it is the most memorable scene in the movie to me because he leans in and he's got his the two
split irises.
Yeah, there's like two of them combined. It's like
it's like the amoeba, the cell dividing when they show the pregnancy video. You know, the cell divides and the egg gets bigger.
And his
like,
voiceover has to be the fucking movie guy. It has to be. Do you read Sutter Kane? It really has to be.
Like very early on, like, do you read Sutter Kane? It is. It's gotta be.
I don't think it's that guy's voice. That looks like ADR. But that guy's voice is awesome.
That's great.
Do you read Sutter Kane?
Oh, well, that's first like
I did trailers.
The first intrusion, I guess, of this insanity or this alternate world comes through several characters tell John Trent that he can see you or I can see.
He sees you.
Yeah, that comes up like several times in the.
Which is scary to me. I think that's scary. I've always wanted to go to a horror convention with the blood drops with I can see spray painted on a t-shirt.
I can just walk around.
Yeah.
Like, who gets it?
I'm not entirely sure what that means.
Well, because he sees you.
But he wrote him. I know we're jumping ahead. Yeah,
well, that's exactly it, right? He needs to give him freaky things. That's the problem with this movie, personally, is that I think it has a great first and third act. Second act is kind of a lot of wandering around until you get to the third act
and stuff.
Because
by the time they get to the hotel,
like you said, he figures out the location where Sutter Kane could be hiding, because Sutter Kane had all his art done by one person and he had these weird red lines all over it. And if you cut them all out, it is a map of New Hampshire.
Yes. With the town of Hobbs End.
Fictional.
Oh, you know where they got that from?
What?
Quatermass in the Pit. Hobbs End is the train station where the bomb is. We got to watch that on this show.
We have to.
You've been talking about Quatermass for a while.
You got to bring up
always talking about Quatermass.
John Quatermass. What the fuck? Well, he's like, what, the Indiana Jones before Indy? We'll talk about that at that movie. So they go to Hobbs End, which I don't know. To me, I hate that whole part in the car. And to me, I just think it's really boring. There's the scene where they didn't want to pay anybody for music, so Sam Neill is singing the Star Spangled Banner. It's like, why? America. From C to, it's like, what the fuck are they talking about?
You don't ever just get shit stuck in your head. It's like, I don't know why I'm singing this, but I'm
the Star Spangled Banner. It's like, is this propaganda? Never. I don't get what this is. If there was a time and place for propaganda, it was that scene. But then, he wakes her up and then he learned the most important thing
he's a foreigner,
you will ever learn is never, never, never throw chips at a driver. That's the most important thing you learn from.
Did we determine where Sam Neill was from when we were watching?
We were discussing between Australia and Kiwi. Like he was from New Zealand.
New Zealand.
I think because it was mentioned that he has a line of wines from New Zealand that he's Kiwi. So one or the other, but it really came out in that scene. It's like, oh well, he's very much whatever that is.
whatever
he's from.
But the scene of getting to Hobbs End is kind of, it's disorienting, which I guess is one of the things that the movie then, this is, becomes like a...
That's also where there's the exposition, trend. Right? Where she's like, you know, where he's like, oh, what's scary about it? It's just, you know, it's bullshit. It's make-believe. And she's like, well, what if the world shared his, you know, perspective? What if, you know, sane and insane can easily swap places, right. You know, like
yeah, it's whatever
one day you will find yourself in a padded cell wondering what happened to the world. That's a great speech.
Yeah. But that's the scary thing to me. Like that's what scares me. Cause what she says, like, what if one day like insane becomes the majority and all of a sudden, like you're the one, like she said, you're the one in the padded
you're
cell.
The
like,
crazy that's, person.
That is yeah. scary to me.
Yeah.
That's
that
a cool
people
concept.
Are just going to go so crazy that what I think what was normal becomes insane. And I'm
shit that's happening
for that.
To me every day.
Yeah, dude, I was going to say, it's like, I don't want to get political in this, sure. But it's like, dude, this is happening. Like, in the mouth of madness is going on right
no,
now.
No, it's scary. Well, like, that is the scary part.
Yeah, I was going to say, some of it just happens that probably everybody as they get older. Like, sure. You just go like, I don't know what the fuck these people are doing anymore. But yep.
But then this just has weird things like you mentioned, you liked the kid on the bike a little earlier.
Yeah,
Hayden Christensen?
No, he was the paper boy. Paper yeah, boy. Okay, yeah no, he was not the... The kid on the bike that turns into a plastic old man.
With a like, bad wig.
Thanks, yeah. K&B. What the fuck?
Yeah, you can do better?
Yeah, like, dude, that's Jesus. Like, yeah, man. This is, well, some of the monster shit's really great, but man, some of the shit's like, what the fuck? Like, who did that? Like, couldn't you give fucking Kirksman or Nicotero, like,
something.
A few extra dollars? Like,
that was the intern's job that day. It was just like, oh, I hey, swear. God, go for it.
I this got this, like old plastic mask.
There is, like, a pretty substantial, like, menagerie on display in this movie, you know, and watching it this time, I'm like, well, they really did build a bunch of gloop covered, you know, animatronic right. creatures.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing on the budget, you know, because it seems like it's a low
lower, movie. Yeah,
because I mean, what it, it's two people in a sedan or whatever
yeah.
it is.
Yeah. I mean, but they got,
the whole movie is an empty town, two people in a car.
Yeah,
that's the movie, and they found that church. That's some church.
Did they
somewhere.
Find that?
That's a yeah. church
somebody.
Somewhere.
It's in Canada somewhere.
Yeah,
so like
this, film,
Roman
this was filmed in
Greek
Toronto.
Orthodox Church with the
spires and everything. Yeah.
I'm sure they, I don't
Byzantine
know.
Byzantine church from the...
Byzantine.
Yeah.
According to him.
But that is the fun of that scene, right? Is they're like, they're reading from Sutter Kane's novels. Like
it's a tour guide, he says.
Well,
yeah.
Well, I keep on mentioning how the scare scenes in this read like a horror novel, right? You just don't know when reality is going to shift. We're talking about how there's the kid on the bike turns into an old man. She hits him and like we
very
have
much.
Our weird, you know, what how she once they arrive to Hobbs End, it's almost like
she's
you imagine pick, they go she, through a reality shift.
Right, and then she's
like
picking
that.
Out every single thing like they get into. I think they get into the hotel. It's like there's a loose board there. There's a picture behind it.
Which is actually the Pikmin Hotel, and that is the one reference to Pikmin's model. Yep, that's a H.P. Lovecraft story. Who was a painter. That's why there's a
bunch
the painting.
Of fucking nerds.
Dude, you need to read H.P. Lovecraft because you
nerds.
Will that's horror. Defined. Defined.
I'll read and be like, oh, this connects to this.
Well, it seems to me like I'm my okay. So again, I saw this when it was new, and it that makes it's different now when I watch it because I think you know time makes movies either better or worse as they go on. But the thing I remember about my first experience watching is like up to this point, till they get to the hotel. The motel. Hotel?
It's a
like,
hotel.
It was Holiday it was Inn. Intriguing. The setup was cool. It was like I was with it. And then once you get to the hotel and all the stuff that succeeds it, whatever, for the next, I guess, the second act, does kind of feel like they are just throwing abstract shit at you.
It
like,
is abstract.
Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, so their intention is
but it's almost
to,
like you're walking through a short story town, right? You are like, if
it
say,
is. It
say
very
if you
much
go,
is.
Yeah, say it's like Westworld, but for fucking Sutter Kane.
It feels like Stephen King world. It, like they just wandered into
and
it.
And I'm sure they meant for that. Because, yeah, like you say,
Well, are they trying to disorient you? Is that the idea? Because there's like, there's children who walk up to the woman and they're like, you're our mommy.
Oh,
who looks after you? You do. And you're like, you do. What motivates that? No,
that's not meant to make sense. It can't.
Yeah, it can't. There's a bunch of stuff that it seems like just doesn't make sense.
You know
like
what even, today is?
Even,
today's mommy's day.
Yeah, even to the internal logic of the movie,
yeah.
I think it doesn't make sense. But it's like, because then he ends up like going through some time loop where he keeps on encountering these like transformed zombie villagers.
But we are in that world, though. That's what I like about it, because, well, I mean, we are in that world. I mean, that's why Stiles is so freaked out, because she's just like, this is the fucking Pikmin Hotel. I know everything about all these stories.
She recognizes
it. And I like, he's like, if you know, if this was reality, you know, blah blah blah, there'd be a black Byzantine church at the west side or whatever. That's like, she's like, you read wrong. It's on the east side,
East View
or whatever.
There it is.
And they only park a mile away, so you get the whole church. Like anytime they park there, it's a mile away to get the whole church in the shot.
Yeah.
But I like that. I like how. Once again, it's the whole, she starts reading books, and I really think that, like, develops this fucking world. I mean, as cheap as it is.
Well, it worked better this time around when I was watching
it. Like, what does he say about the church, about how, like, it was built in this, but then, like, the black church swallowed it up the way it swallowed our minds.
Yeah. The remnants of it are still inside and whatnot.
Like, yeah, because it was, like, the church of the old ones or whatever.
It's almost like it's the church from Dagon, right? It becomes an esoteric
order of Dagon.
You need, if you're doing Lovecraft, you gotta have the Dagon, the church of Dagon, and that's exactly what they did, but it was the Sutter Kane.
Yeah. Well, it gives, like, I mean, I see what you're saying, the kind of embellishment through the vocabulary, you know, like, that's the greenhouse where one night...
The history.
Yeah, they're the townspeople saw something moving in there that had snakes for arms or whatever. Yeah.
And Miss Pikmin, it was supposed to be a lady that hacked... He's like, Miss Pikmin was a lady that hacked her husband into bit pieces.
She got a handcuff to her ankle at the bottom of the fucking thing. Like, the actress who plays her, like, she's been in a bunch of stuff. She was like Adam Sandler's grandma and fucking Happy Gilmore and shit. But, like, I like her in this. Like, she's very, her character in this, her reaction to the things, like, when he's questioning her, it's like, I like her reactions to it. Like, she plays it very well. Just like, I don't know.
But because he's trying to figure out, is this a set up town from Arcane Publishing to fucking, like, so I like that. So I'll run back and tell everybody about your haunted little town and sell you a million more copies. Well, fuck that.
Fuck that.
And that's where I also think the movie makes a misstep, is that she admits that this was a hoax, and you're like, wait, what?
But we
is it or is it not?
There's not a town. Yeah, I know, they weren't supposed to find a town.
Don't you think it's like one layer too many? It's like, we could have lived without that, and it's still, you know.
I don't mind the insurance fraud thing, because, dude, like, if you really investigate what people do for advertising, it's insane. It's insane the lengths people will go. Yeah. So I don't find that to be what's so crazy about it. It's just the fact that...
it's like the first augmented reality game. Whoever solves the map puzzle and finds the hidden town, you know, now we do that all the time.
But the fact that, I don't know, she goes like apeshit a little too early for me, because that's when...
She goes into it real quick.
Like, yeah, real quick, because...
A little too quick for me. I was just like, woo!
Before we even get there, I want to talk about, we're still at the church, where, you know, they read the history of the church, and then all of a sudden these trucks pull up, right? And once again, we're in the middle of a horror story.
Yeah.
You know, where Viggo the Carpathian.
You're like the buzzing of flies, dude, going.
This, I swear to God, it's got to be like the only movie I've seen this guy in besides Ghostbusters 2.
Well, that's what I, because I looked at him like, as in the middle of it, I'm like, is that fucking Viggo?
Fucking Viggo.
And then I was looking, I'm like, yeah, he's in this. He's in Die Hard 2.
Is he in Die Hard 2?
Die Hard. He's in actually Die Hard.
Really?
Yeah, he's one of the,
one of the terrorists.
They're moving the bombs, the rockets, and it falls off, and he's like, it's like, this is that guy. He gets blown up at the end. But yeah, I was like, fucking Viggo.
So that guy, I like how, once again, we get set in the middle of a horror story. These guys get to watch a horror story, right?
Yeah.
And the trucks pull up, and the guy gets out with guns, and he's like, Kane, give me back my son!
Yeah.
and we have this weird like door opening, or like, you know, that effect. I wish that would that could have worked with like the proper editing. You know, doors
opening, opens and it's Sutter Kane.
It's the first shot you get of Sutter Kane.
Jürgen Prochnow.
And then we get the Hounds of Hell.
I've seen him in a few things.
Yeah.
Is he a Das Boot? Oh shit.
Yeah, he's the captain.
He's genius.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
I kind of like
also in House of the Dead. Or so
but then what? Zardoz, the Hound of Hell. Is that the name of the Hound of Hell? Zartan?
Das Boot?
No, goddammit.
Oh.
What's the name of that horror movie, something? The Hound of Hell? That, it's a Doberman pincher. That?
Yeah, it's Dracula's dog or whatever. No, Zoltan.
Zoltan, the Hound of Hell.
Zoltan.
Then a bunch of those dogs come out.
Is that the thing from Big?
What?
No, that's Zardoz. Zoltan's from fucking Dude, Where's My Car?
Anyway, a bunch of Doberman pinchers that you know are the Hounds of Hell come out to bite their sleeves.
I know, I was watching that. I'm like, so all those guys are the trainers, right? And there's Vigo hightailing it out of there.
Because Vigo doesn't get bit. He just runs.
Yeah.
I love that these characters are in the middle of a book.
They are. They're in the.
I kind of love
books,
that about
right?
it. Right.
A bunch of series. That's why she can go to the Pikmin Hotel.
Right.
That's the Hobbs End Horror.
I kind of.
Then they
love
go
that.
To the church, and that's whatever the fuck.
And that's
it
why
is.
It feels so like Stephen King to me. And like we said, we know Stephen King gets a lot of his influences from.
It's like if you
Lovecraft
went to Stephen King's Maine.
Right. Right. Like, everything that he wrote about Maine. If you went there, you went to Derry, you went to all that stuff. If you like visited, and like Naval those characters were just wandering the town and everything.
Yeah.
And you got to interact with them.
But it was like Rhode Island. Island or no Arkham, Massachusetts.
Yeah, Massachusetts.
Right?
But I love that about Arkham, this. Yeah. Like that's fun. I like them just being in the middle.
But it
of
is
shit
like
going
I don't know
on.
Why Sam Neill would just be like, "You guys did a lot to pull this off." It's like, what fucking? Are you serious?
Well, when the guy blows his head off in front of him, is that the moment?
I like when he goes.
He wrote me that way.
Yeah, he's got the bite. The bite taken out of his cheek, and he says, "A 5-year-old did this. My 5-year-old." But
before it did her mother, or she did her mother.
But that's also another thing I like about the subtext of this movie is, in a weird way, I mean, it doesn't drive it home really, but I take it from.
I'm gonna make it.
To me, this kind of talked about. I don't want to say it talked about communism, but it talked about.
It
started when they say it started with the children and went to the parents. That's how fascist dictatorships work. That's why fascist dictatorships always want like state-run schools and blah, 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 because you start with the children, then it moves on to the adults. If you can get a kid addicted to these violent video games, they turn into adults. That violence grows with them. You know what
like,
I mean?
This is a theme of Carpenter. Like, you can pick this out.
But
I
this
think
isn't
a
Carpenter's...
lot of his...
He didn't write this, though. I mean, yeah, he chose to direct it, but...
Yeah, but it's like it seems tailor-made for him, you know, because his theme always does seem to be...
Media.
Like, he's always the rugged individual, right? Snake Plissken, I think, is the John Carpenter character. And
John Wayne is the cowboy.
Yeah, exactly. And it's
Kurt
like,
Russell. Let's just
the
make
idea
it, just
is
call
to,
it Kurt Russell.
To not become one of them. Like, they are coming, and they're insidious. They're getting in amongst you and converting
Invasion
you.
Of the body snatchers.
We can just call it Kurt Russell. Like, that's his character.
Yeah. That's the John Carpenter avatar.
It is, yeah.
But you have, like, the Thing or this, you know, like what you're saying. It's like the infection started here and spread, you know. I mean, it's like I look at Halloween. I'm like, do you see it there? But Halloween is like you just don't want to become one of the dead people. He doesn't want to conform. That's the problem. Yeah. Or that's not the problem. That's Carpenter's thing. He's like
conformity
he wants to be
death.
Anti-conformity.
Right.
Be an individual, and horror to him in his movies is becoming one of this mass group thinking evil.
Right.
That's evil, I guess,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I can see him regarding that as just like, ugh, who would want to do that? Just
He would, I guess, see communism as a.
Well, but you know what I'm saying? I mean, that's why I just threw communism out there as an example. But I, you know, I'm more thinking about the fact that you get young kids addicted to violent material. They grow old with the violent material, you know, starts with the kids, moves on,
right.
La, la, la.
Sticks with them.
And that's why I like the little monster kids. Like, you're my mommy. All that shit.
Little fucking disease.
And it is kind of creepy.
Around.
Like when they first see him, they're chasing the dog. And then when you see him the second time, the dog's missing the leg, you know, like holy fuck, they caught the dog and tore his leg off. Woo, this movie. Yeah. But that's when Sam Neill's like, fuck this shit. You know, I'm going to get the hell out of here. Well, she actually
She's more so than,
because she's like, I'm going to go talk to Kane. Like, we have to read the end of the book. Like, if we're That's why I'm surprised. We can skip to the end. This fucking bitch really buys into, like, really? Like, we're living in a book. That's like, we're living in, like, a fiction. If we read the end of his book, we'll know how to leave the town.
Like, that's where I was hesitant in this movie. I'm like, wow, she jumps to that really quickly.
Really quickly.
And I'm just like, ooh, I'm like, we're there already?
But
all right.
You can excuse that in the logic of the movie because she is a fictional character. She's being she was written that way. She was always a fictional character. We find out later that, you know, Jackson Harglow never did send her, or she was written out.
Never.
You
know? Yeah. But, I mean, at the time, I don't know that. I'm just like, wow.
I know, yeah.
Jumping into
her
quick.
Behavior is like very.
Yeah, and then she starts making out with him. Just like, just come on, don't let me do this alone.
Well, she has a good scene where I'm losing me, or whatever. Like,
I'm losing me.
It's scary.
Yeah, it's like,
losing your mind because you read the book.
Well, I love that fucking scene when she goes to meet Sutter Kane. It's a little long winded just to get there, right? You got to walk through the church, you got to open a door, see a little room, close the door, walk out, then hear Ty. Then go back and then see, oh my god, it's a much bigger room, and there's Sutter Kane.
A lot of rooms changing.
But that's when, like, I don't know, you just see Sutter Kane, and that's when he spills the beans about, like, the whole time I thought I was making this up, but they've been telling me what to write. You know, who would have thought that one day I would make reality? And he makes her read the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and then she eventually morphs into, because I think, like, you know, part of the, like, this book, reading it, not only changes your mind and your opinions on things or your quote-unquote reality, it actually transforms your physical biology also into another, you know, one of the, well, but once again, a young one, an old one, a
but
deep
is
one,
that the
whatever.
But once again, like, are they talking about a actual physical change, or are they just talking about this is the one that's going to fucking turn you into a violent, like, there's no turning back. Once you read this, you will be a violent, violent person.
You're saying the metaphor?
The monsters are, well, yeah, because like I said, you watch this movie, you don't know, is John Trent already crazy from reading Sutter Kane's books?
Yeah.
The so therefore, if you read the book, you change it to a monster. It's almost like Videodrome could almost like play in this area, right? There,
yeah.
Where you don't know what you're seeing is a hallucination. People might not really be monsters, but since they're violent, you see them as monsters. You know, it's their internal thing. But
it's an interesting take on it. Yeah, I guess every time I've watched that, I've always taken it as objective reality. We're seeing the reality through the eyes of John Trent.
Well, that's what I was questioning.
But he read the books.
That's what
crazy.
I was questioning.
And,
like,
and this whole thing is
this actually happening, or is this what he's
this
is
could,
he seeing?
This
people
could just
this?
Be
but this
him.
Is also what he's relating, because this movie sets up that it starts in the mental ward. Yeah. He's already crazy, well, explaining this to
but
David
Warner.
They explain
Warner. That at the end, though. Because that's actually why, or do we want to wait? Or do
well,
we
I just
want to
mean
talk
that
about
it
this
it
is
sets
why
him up
he,
as he could be an unreliable narrator. Mm. Everything that you're seeing
oh, yeah,
is,
yeah.
But no, know, but see, I think it sets him up as very serious, because when David Warner sees he drew the cross, he's like, yeah, this is very, you know,
that'll keep
if they
here.
Saw this, it'd be just enough. To, and that's why he kills the kid with the axe. It's just to get put in the mental. He's not crazy, or at least not, you know,
yeah.
He's not psycho crazy. He just mimics what the... what the editor or what the
what is the, viewed as crazy?
No, the axe killer that was his agent.
Right, from, yeah, from
all
afar.
He does is mimic the agent to get put into the insane asylum, so he can kind of be safe. He can be locked away where it's safe because the rest of the world's going crazy.
Yeah,
but so yeah, so John Trent finds out that he's the one that's supposed to take the book back. He's
into
going
the
to
the real world.
He's delivering the new reality. This is the new Bible. All that cool shit.
Yeah.
And that's where we get into our kind
my
of our
favorite color is blue.
Our religious discussion about how, like, more people believe in Sutter Kane's work than the Bible. And I think that's a very powerful idea. The fact that, I mean, I've in the past few years, I've almost taken that in a weird literal way where, like, go out in the world right now. You see all these people wearing shirts with Satan on them. Everything's got Satan on it. If you even mention Jesus, they'll like, you know, they'll fucking, you know.
Depends on who you're hanging out with.
But just the idea that, fuck, you lost me.
Satan.
Yeah. Just the idea that if you believe in a world consciousness, you know, like say we all do share one consciousness, we can either feed it with negative thoughts or positive thoughts, right? So I like that idea that like if we just did believe, like fuck it if Christianity's fake or whatever, but if we would have just believed in it, mankind would have survived and maybe lived in peace, but we did it. We fucking decided to go to horror and I mean shit, just look at nowadays. Horror movies or whatever started in the, like the 20s or 30s. A horror movie used to be the intent to murder. That's it. It was just like, oh my God, that person wants to kill that person. This is horrifying. Now it's how many bodies can you build up? Where are we going to be in another 100 years? I think we'll be back to the Colosseum. We'll be watching real people get murdered another 100 years.
In just 10 years, you'll have virtual, like super virtual.
But still, we'll be doing it for real, though, in 100 years. Because it took us 100 years to get from the intent of murdering is a horrible thought. And then now we just need to see bodies. About how are they going to do it? How fucking blah, blah, blah. So give it another 100 years. And where are we going to fucking be at? You know, we might not be able to turn back. So I just like that idea that. That, I mean, shit, this movie blows my mind in that way. This is like why this movie's kind of Twilight Zone-y to me, right? Because, I mean, it's really just like, holy fuck, that concept is just like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's got a lot of, yeah, I mean, the themes and the ideas that it raises are intriguing in that way. And kind of, you know, they're big ideas, right? You can bite them off and chew on them, think about, you know, some of the stuff that's there. But, like, the execution is, you know, kind of, yeah. I mean, it's like Carpenter's a good enough director that everything is staged well enough. It seems like the biggest enemy of this movie is the budget.
I think it's trying to be scary. It's putting those boo scares in and trying to, like, augment reality to make that the scare. And that's just like, fuck, it makes this movie drag a little bit. Because it's like, dude, come on. You know, I don't
mind. You're saying it drags through the second half? Because once middle, he actually comes middle. Back to reality.
Oh, that starts, because that's when you deal with the monsters. Where, I mean, just that fucking scene where
he's running along.
Where,
oh, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Where he takes the book. You know, he's like, that's it, I'm done now. I'm basically God. Sutter Kane's like, I'm God now. Once you take that back, that's going to be the new thing.
Yeah.
Then he's like, you must go now. I can't hold him back any longer, which is like, well, if that's what the old ones want, why would they eat him, right? I don't know. Whatever.
He wants to be eaten.
Well, probably just because, hey, fuck it. They're still like God monsters. They don't give a shit if they're going to do something good for them. They're just like, food. Rah, rah, rah.
Yeah.
Mortal. And there's that awesome, awesome idea. I don't know about the effect, but where Sutter Kane peels himself like a book.
Yeah. He is the doorway.
Because that is the book, right? That is the moment where you, the viewer, it'd be as if you were looking at the book and you're viewing inside of it, right? Because Sutter Kane tells him, you're a fictional dude I created. Your whole purpose is to come to this fictional town and take my book back to New York to get published and start the change. Mm. And fucking dude can't handle that, right? Like, what? No one pulls my strings. I'm, you know, I know reality. This is reality. This is reality.
This is not reality.
And that's a really powerful moment for a cheap movie when he leans into the darkness and she starts explaining what he sees. Oh, right? Yeah. The whole, like, you know, he's
spilling and tumbling, like, over each other.
Oh, I like how, shriek. What is that? The shriek. Like, he doesn't need to shriek because their shrieks do it for him. Yeah. The shrieks of the things coming or whatever the fuck. That's like a perfect,
that's a good scene.
Lovecraftian
scene,
right? Because it's all,
because, you know, it's on his face. Yeah, you don't see what he's seeing. You're getting this.
It's monsters coming out of a darkness. Of it.
Yeah.
A wall of monsters.
They cut away from, because I'm guessing they don't hold up under scrutiny. But sure.
That's the one time Carpenter in the commentary talks about, like, well, the reason that is because, like, anything in Lovecraft, it's too horrible to bear. You can't, like, just can't see.
So that was intentional.
I would think so, because, that's the...
Or at least it worked in their favor.
Yeah, because I would say that's what I don't like about a Lovecraftian-type movies, is they want to show a monster where it's supposed to be this thing where... If something is fucking frightening to even look at,
you can't show it. You
can't show it. Yeah.
And in a weird way, that is.
It's always going to be a letdown.
Yeah. Well, that's the perfect version, in a weird way, of the end of Shadow Over Innsmouth, right? Where he's running from the horde of things and he just sees these glimpses of tentacles and fish things and. And then, yeah, he just wakes up on the side of the road.
Yeah. Hayden Christensen.
Hayden Christensen, the paper boy.
But yeah. He, I mean, this scene, the sequence, you know, him getting back to New York culminates in that moment where he sits down with Charlton Heston. He's explaining what's happening.
You get a nice little drum beat again.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The book finds its way home, or the book returns, or something like that. It's on the soundtrack home. But the idea that once he gets back and explains this, the publisher's like, well, you gave me this
book. Well, we both know that's
in the spring.
True.
I didn't send it.
We published it 7 weeks ago.
I don't remember this person you say I sent with you. I know I sent you.
He's like, don't put it out. Just don't do it. You know, don't. You got to trust me. People will go mad. You know, well, maybe there's still hope. Maybe people don't, you know, maybe they won't read it. He's like, well. The movie comes out next month. I can guarantee that's why Charlton Heston's next, like, damn you, you blew it up. You know, it's the whole, we printed it and the movie comes out next month. That's his, woo. I got another Apes fucking, like, Twilight Zone zinger in there.
Charlton Heston was on, like, a streak right there for a little while when he was in, like, True Lies, this, and, like, Wayne's World or something like that.
Yeah, was he in True Lies?
Yeah, he was the head of the...
Holy shit.
Whatever the division of the CIA was.
I don't remember this, but yeah, I don't remember seeing it.
I don't recall. Oh, weird. I don't recall
really?
That.
I don't remember. I don't remember them showing the head of like Schwarzenegger.
I don't remember. No, Tom I don't either.
I heard, yeah, Tom. It's like Schwarzenegger, Tom Arnold. That's
crazy.
Weird.
But then he tells him that, like, well, we both know I sent you alone. There is no Styles. Yeah. You know. Oh, well, he must have been written out. And that's my only the only way if I would remake this movie. The only thing I would add is that he shouldn't have met Styles till after he read the book. That way, that way you can play with the idea: is he crazy?
Yes,
or you know, or did he really?
I agree with that.
Not send an editor with him. Like if they would have waited just one right. scene, if they just would have
even if they had played that scene where he's like, because he says send Styles in. Like if she had, like if he hadn't mentioned her and she just came in and reacted the same way she did in the scene. Like even that would go more towards her not being real. He calls her in specifically, which kind of gives it up.
But
on
the
that.
Movie also doesn't. Maybe I don't know. I took this as a flaw in it that it gives since the movie is being told from John Trent's point of view. There are several scenes from Linda Stiles' point of view, and it's like, but if she's not a real character, you know, whatever happens.
But this
to her,
is a book. Though you are reading this as if you are experiencing anything, you are still following her perspective of a person still finding out they are fictional as well.
But how
not just John Trent.
John Trent know like what happened when he was asleep or when he was not there. You know what I mean?
Well, because like, Sutter,
he's narrating the story at the beginning, but he would have no knowledge of those.
Well, because Sutter Kane didn't write that memory out of him.
He wouldn't have those memories because he wasn't present. It was her. She's in the car awake, you know, discovering that they're traveling, they're driving through the air.
Where she is the character who's acknowledging the world around them.
Yes.
Well, because
she goes to see Sutter Kane, I think, is the other one.
Because it's still a book. You can't, even though Sutter Kane erased her in the end of the book, doesn't mean she doesn't exist. That's why.
Didn't exist before.
Yeah, you can't just say, well, that doesn't make sense. Because we're not watching, I mean.
It's kind of like Brandon. He just got dropped at some point.
Well, we don't know that.
We wrote
it up. That's like the big ticket, the big, like, that's the real zinger of this movie, right? When John Trent gets out of the insane asylum because, like, it just goes so fucking hectic, which, oh, I love when the doctor from Gremlins 2, when David Warner comes out and says, the man thinks he's a fictional character living in a Sutter Kane book or whatever, then the doctor goes, do you read Sutter Kane? Oh, I fucking love that. Because right there, you know, oh, my God, this guy might be a little loony. You know, anybody that reads the fucking Sutter Kane, you know, you got to question their fucking sanity.
Yeah.
For those of you wondering who this guy is, it's Lionel Luther from Smallville.
Yes. Yes. That is the other role that I know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He was. Yeah, he was.
He had long hair there.
Long hair was remember for Gremlins too.
That's the first thing I saw. I'm like, hey, it's
well,
that guy.
Well, he's a genius.
Because well, he had the same hair,
right, dude. He's kind of eccentric.
And he's very positive.
Clamp. Very eccentric, positive.
He makes me happy if that guy's in a movie. If he's on screen, he makes me happy.
Yes.
That's fucked up, right? That guy's a good... It's not even that he's such a great actor. No.
No.
He just always plays these fucking great, quirky characters.
He played the devil in this TV show Brimstone.
Really?
With the guy from 30.
I kind of remember
Peter,
that.
Whatever the fuck his name is.
Crazy.
Yeah, he had the long hair. No, before him. I don't remember his fucking name.
So, do we, I mean, I also like that the, Yeah, did I ever tell you my favorite color is blue? And Sutter Kane appears next. And that was actually, that's a blue boss. Everybody's, their clothes are blue. Their hair's dye blue. That's a blue.
You can tell.
That's not blue. That is not a filter.
No.
They actually have a blue boss that with different
You can tell because I looked at her hair. I'm like, sure, her hair's fucking blue.
Her hair's fucking blue.
That could be the...
No, I watched the commentary. It's a blue boss.
Yeah. No, it's blue.
But that's very fun, right?
It's cool. Just a fun idea
to make it really blue without just that filter look, right?
Yeah, I was like,
yeah, I love that. He's losing his mind, right? It's great. And so... Reality finally breaks down, and basically, what monsters let him out of the insane asylum,
and he ends up in a
everybody
movie
else
theater
is dead or whatever.
Showing
we don't know.
John Carpenter's In Mouth of Madness, starring John Trent.
But we are because that's the thing. That's what you got to understand is like this is not a character that necessarily found out he was in a book. Blah blah. Like, this is the movie. This is, he found out he's the movie. That's why it's starring John Trent.
And why would you,
it's not
you
starring
do
some other actor.
The movie.
It's that, exactly. We're watching the movie, so he's watching exactly what we watch. We can't read the book and see it, so we watch the movie and saw it, and that's what he did. Yeah. So in a weird way, he's not the fictional book character finding out. He is the movie character finding out that a movie was made about the book or whatever.
Yeah.
Fucking brilliant.
And that's why the only appropriate response to that is to laugh maniacally.
You go crazy.
To fade out.
Yeah, you go crazy.
Sit there and laugh and be done.
And any movie that like ends on a fucking sour note or reality broke down, it's like those are the best horror movies. Like regardless of how weak I think the second act in this is. Just the fact that you end it with that sort of like, oh my God, you know, reality is fucked. I just think that's beautiful.
Yeah, I can accept that and be like, yeah, all right, I get you.
I mean, maybe it doesn't need to be longer than like a 45-minute like Twilight Zone or some bullshit, but
sure.
But still, it's just a fun movie.
All right, well, is that it for In the Mouth of Madness?
I believe.
Before we go to Igor. Is it Igor or Igor?
Igor. It depends on. I was wondering, is Igor owned by Universal, so everybody does Igor to get around it? I'm not sure, right?
Well, if we get sued by Universal, I'll take it. Igor!
Masters, the mail! I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
All right, and thank you for that mail, Igor. Oh, my God, everybody's writing in this week. First of all, on our Lemora, the Child's Tale of the Supernatural episode, Babette Georgie writes in on Facebook. Oh, by the way, you can get a hold of us on Facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show, on Twitter, @SatFreakShow, or on email, SaturdayNightFreakShow@yahoo.com. If you have a comment about this or any other episode, feel free to write in and we'll read your comment on air. Babette says about Lemora, I guess you'd call this a vampire movie, but it felt more satanic to me. I wondered what kind of parent would let their young children act in a movie like this. She says that it was a very satisfying film, not much action. It could have been more erotic, but it succeeds in being creepy, like ick creepy. And I felt unsettled watching it.
Yeah, us too.
Well, the story of Cheryl Rainbow Smith is a tragic one. I mean, she ended up in, losing her life to, I think, hepatitis from heroin usage. So I don't think she had a very strong parental oversight. Damien Prowse writes in about our Masters of Damien. The Universe episode.
Holy shit. Late to the game, but we appreciate it anyway.
He says, I remember going to the show to see Masters of the Universe. That was the first time I saw Frank Langella, and I became an instant fan of his. And now 29 years later, I'm still a huge Frank Langella fan. Yeah, because I mean,
we all like
dude, that. I swear to God, I put Frank Langella as Skeletor up against almost any villain in any Marvel movie. Or I mean,
Frank Langella as Skeletor.
Yeah.
Fuck.
You didn't know that?
I didn't. I wasn't here for this.
Oh shit! Yeah.
Holy shit!
Frank Langella as Skeletor.
Well, he's in a genius movie.
Holy
Everybody
fuck.
Else is in like a bullshit.
Holy
like,
fuck! Do you have this?
Yeah, of course I have it.
Bring this next week. I need to borrow this. Frank Langella as Skeletor.
Oh, wow. Great.
Yeah, bring
great.
This. I want to watch this.
He is a highlight of that movie. And his Dracula is also awesome if you can
see Skeletor first.
Ooh, ouch. Okay, so Chris Huddleston writes in about Scream. I posed a question on Facebook. What was better, Scream the TV series or Scream Queens? Chris says Scream Queens is, no question, not scary by any means, but it was very funny and with some great dialogue.
Looked entertaining.
I need to get it.
Looked entertaining.
And
Jamie Lee Curtis and whatnot, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's funny. It's from Ryan Murphy, the guy who did.
Yeah. Who does every other show on FX and fucking,
And now the OJ thing. So Dom Cree writes in and says,
Dom!
Hey guys, I just thought I'd say that the Freak Show needs to do a buddy cop movie review sometime. Dead Heat, Heart Condition, Downtown, too many classics.
What about The Man with Two Heads? That seems like buddy-ish. We can do that, right?
I don't think that's a buddy cop movie, though, is it?
Man with Two buddy-ish, Heads? Like a black guy and a white guy stuck together.
Oh, shit, I know what you're talking about. Is that like The Man with Two Heads? That's the two-headed,
it's something.
Oh, damn it. It's Rosie Greer and,
A very racist white man with a black man on his shoulder.
Andy. Amos and Andy?
No, he gets the black guy's head like stuck onto his shoulder.
Yeah.
The thing with two heads.
Something. He's got two heads. One is black, one is white and racist. Okay, that's all I know.
Yeah.
Who's in this?
Ray Milland from The X, The Man with the X-Ray Eyes, and Rosie Greer.
Jesus.
All right. So that brings us to our final thoughts, the wrap-ups on In the Mouth of Madness.
Colin.
Oh, hey. I guess I go first.
You go first.
So, yeah, this movie has improved with age for me. I still think, you know, its execution. It's like, do you recommend this movie to someone who hasn't ever seen a horror movie? No. It's not like a mainstream kind of thing, but that's okay. If you're listening to this show, you're already on the inside track, right? I mean, like, you've probably already seen this. I think you have to, because this is John Carpenter's on the, Horror 101 syllabus. And this... I'm going through my mind right now. Is this the last decent movie that he made? This was in the 90s.
Last decent movie, yeah.
That he made. I read an article that said this was the just recently. There's been some talk about In the Mouth of Madness online. Somebody was putting forth the idea that this was the scariest movie of the 90s.
Oh, dear Lord. No.
And I'm like, well, I mean, the 90s scary? Was a kind like, of
if,
a,
maybe
you know,
if you're, maybe if you were in the 90s.
But yeah, because I didn't think so at the time, to tell you the truth. Like when I saw it originally, I was led to, you know, I had an expectation of what John Carpenter was. He had kind of, you know, I saw Memoirs of an Invisible Man, which seemed like a job that he did for hire.
Very much.
I saw that one in the theater. I hadn't seen.
I remember seeing that one early on.
I'd seen the other ones on video, Prince of Darkness and They Live, you know, coming out of the 80s. And this was the first movie that he did with New Line Cinema, and they treated it like it was a big deal that they got John Carpenter with their studio. Because if you go and look at the trailers for this, I remember it was like, you know, he terrified you with Halloween, you know, he scared you with Christine, he, you know, did. And it was like, John Carpenter is back. And it's like, well, he never really left. I've watched the movie he did, you know, 2 years ago. But they were positioning it like this was the comeback of the master of horror. And it didn't do well at the box office. And like I said, I think my initial impression of it was, you know, when you go into a John Carpenter movie, you're taking the movies that you have seen that he's done with you as baggage.
Yeah.
And you want something that exceeds or at least meets that level of quality. And to me, upon first viewing, the first 20 minutes did and the last 20 minutes did, and in the middle it just kind of seemed like a jumbled mashup. It's easier to appreciate it now because I think, you know, I'm accustomed to it. There hasn't really been anything like this since. I think it stands up as unofficially one of the best adaptations. It captures the spirit of like H.P. Lovecraft's fiction in a movie, which I think is really fucking hard to do, but this movie kind of does it.
Um,
Time's up.
No, yeah. No, I mean,
moving on.
This is definitely going to be a recommendation. So, yeah, I mean, I like, I don't love, but I like In the Mouth of Madness now quite a bit. And like I said, after this was like vampires,
yeah,
Ghosts of Mars,
vampires. It was War, over.
You know, Village of the Damned. So
it's I got to revisit that one. I everyone says it's bad, but I got to revisit that one.
It's not horrible. Like, he doesn't make horrible movies.
No, never it's horrible
just,
movies.
It's not just good.
Flat.
Sure.
Yeah, that's the biggest sin that John. Well, Pro-Life is horrible, right? That episode of the TV show. Yeah. But everything else is either, you know, is better than a flat fucking line. And Village of the Damned is just like, it's there, but it, there's no peaks and there's no valleys. It's just a fucking, okay, I sat.
It's got Kirstie Alley in it.
Yeah. The cast is very, you know, 80s TV or something like that.
Christopher Reeve.
Yeah, Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill. Yeah.
And Michael Paré, you know, who hadn't done anything since Streets of Fire, probably, and Eddie and the Cruisers. But, yeah, so it's, let's go with the two crazy thumbs up. I don't know.
Two crazy thumbs.
Yeah. In the Mouth of Madness.
There you go. I think I initially watching this, my opinion of it has changed from the initial viewing to the discussion with you guys over it. Because I don't know if you had anybody to discuss this with after you first saw it back when it first came out. I'm pretty sure I had like the initial reaction you did watching it tonight that you first had back in 1995.
Really?
Well, it's just to me, it felt like it's a perfect version of watching a man just go insane. And I kind of took it at that. I like talking about it. You know, you see more of the themes that he was going for it, and exploring that. And I appreciate that. I like a good amount of this movie. I like Sam Neill. Like, I haven't seen Sam Neill in a lot of other stuff. I haven't seen Sam Neill in a lot of other stuff besides, you know, like, I think Jurassic Park. Not a lot.
He was anyway. In Omen 3.
No.
Yeah.
I think I probably saw Omen 2, and that was about it.
Did you see Omen 3? Sam Neill's good at it.
Is it? But I like...
I was like, how many horror movies is Sam Neill
yeah. in? But I like him. I like him in this. I think he's really good. I like all the kind of like the actors that surround him in this. David Warner and I forgot his name from Gremlins 2 and everything. Mm. Like whatever. But he's, like Gremlins. I always like you said. I always appreciate seeing him. I always call him
Clamp, Mr. Yeah. Clamp,
John Glover,
John Glover.
John Glover. I always appreciate seeing him. I was kind of vexed watching this first time. I'm just like. It's all right. Exploring the themes a bit more. I like it more. I like that these characters are in the middle of a book. Like, to me, it's in the middle of a Stephen King book. Like, they just find themselves in it and shit's going on. I like the characters recognizing, like, you know, Viggo recognizes, like, that's the way he wrote me. Psh, and blows his head off. I like that he finds out that, you know, Kane was just writing these characters, and he figures out he's just a character in this. And, you know, as it gets more meta, like, I appreciate that. And it kind of ends like, you know, I like the ending where it just kind of ends where he's like, he's a character in this, and the only thing you can do is just go sit in a theater and watch yourself and just laugh yourself crazy. Like, you are, everything's insane. It's all done. Just laughing to insanity. I did like the movie. I'm kind of with Colin on this. I'm like, I don't love it. I do like it. I would recommend it. I think it's worth seeing. And you know, according, Colin's got a better eye for this as far as it being, Carpenter's last good film. I mean, come on, Escape from.
I told him when I met Carpenter, I told him that this was the last good horror movie ever made.
Yeah. I mean, I still have a place in my heart for Escape from L.A. Like, that just sits there with me. But other than that, maybe it is Carpenter's last good film. I liked it well enough. I would recommend you see it as part of, you know, his kind of repertoire of movies. So I would recommend it.
I actually do love this movie. Not necessarily because it's a perfect movie, but just I've never... As long as I've watched horror movies, I've just never seen another movie like this. And I guess that's what's special about when you try to find horror movies that are a little different, have a different storyline, or Plus, I think it's very hard to. I mean, we keep talking about how hard it is to make a Lovecraftian sort of feel, and it just is. It's just hard. Most times, people just focus on it's a tentacle monster. It's like, well, that's not the fucking point, goddammit. The point is the madness that seeing the tentacle monster fucking brings about. And I mean, I do. The reason this movie is so, I guess special are how important and how well just the moments of exposition work, right? You have nothing in this movie except for two people sitting around just saying like, well, that's what scares me. What if the world shared his perspective? Sane and insanity can easily switch places. Then you have
it does
like,
work well.
Then you have the whole like, well, this is the new Bible. More people believe in my work than believe in the Bible. And you have that stuff that really is a just a strong concept to me, a horrifying concept to me, really. It's one of those things where it's like, fuck. I almost feel like I die a little every time I watch this movie because I'm like, this is the world.
This
is
where we're going. It's where we are.
This is where we're going. In a weird way, I think this movie is a little like, I mean, it's to me, it's telling me what's happening in a weird way. And I just like, I like horror where reality means nothing. It's very hard to pull off. Sometimes it can be very confusing. And I think these guys do it in a good way. I mean, there's some things I think are a little lackluster just due to budgetary. Like when they see the thing in the thing, the snakes are the monster with snakes for arms. And
right.
The,
it's like, well, what dancing. Did
he
do?
He was posing. He was
dancing in a greenhouse.
I'm a monster. Be scared of me. It's like, well, what's he doing, though?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be bigger.
Right.
Yeah. Like, filled the whole thing.
They should have did like, once again, the whole Lovecraft thing. You should have like almost did like a close up from behind just so you could see a shape moving around.
Right, just something moving within camera. Because that's what matters. In that odd way, like we said, being in a book works. Like the visuals of like if you're living in a book, like it worked for me in that way.
And I mean, once again, I've always loved. I mean, Twilight Zone is my favorite series. So if you can actually think of a twist that gets me or like really captures my imagination, that's like the most important thing to me. Is like fucking capture my imagination. You know, let me think about this. I mean, yeah, I think this movie is really ripe for a remake just because Sam Neill is kind of an older character. You can easily replace that with a younger character, get the kids in there. You can do that whole Styles thing where he doesn't meet Styles till after he reads the books. That way you can really question, well, Styles is a figment of his imagination, or did he get written out, or did she get written out by Sutter Kane? Yeah, so this movie, I love this fucking movie. Yeah, the middle section is a little boring. I can recognize it, but there's at least enough stuff in it. The part that really doesn't work for me, I guess we should have talked about this during the review, but I'll mention it real quickly, is when he's trying to leave the town and reality is not letting him, right? Mm. And then he just has that look like, that's what's going on. It's like, what do you mean that's what's going on? I'm like, you don't fucking know. Like, how the fuck, if this is fake, how are they, like, shifting your reality back to this? Like, that's when I would have been, as the character, freaked out. Yeah. But he just has this, like, I figured it out. Like, what? What did you figure out? That you can't leave? It doesn't explain why reality is shifting. But anyway, and actually, I don't like the actress that plays Styles. Mm-hmm. I would replace her with anything. Yep. There's something about her. And like, yeah, I guess she looks New York, you know. I don't, what does that mean, Jewish? But yeah, there's something about her I don't like.
Yeah, especially her, like, the first scene she's in, like, the way she acts throughout the scene.
Because he lights a cigarette and she has to, like, push a cup of coffee, like, right. Put it out, like, asshole.
She's almost forcing her way like, into the scene a little bit. Shit. It's just like, it's a little too much. It shouldn't be a little more subtle for that scene.
Julie Carmen.
She's just better. To work her she's, way like, in. Better than everyone.
That just came out of my
That's
head.
Just how right. The character acts. She's better than everyone.
Yeah, like, she's like a little.
I read books.
Toned down what do you for her do? Scene.
Watch movies?
Yeah. A bit much.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's why we like movies. We can watch scenes and, like, no one has to necessarily drill it into our heads what's going on. But I think there's enough in this movie. I mean, I think that's why I go back to it, is there's enough in this where I don't think they're just talking about monsters in reality. They are talking about violence in the media. They're talking about just weird metaphysical things like, you know, if we discarded religion, what would be replace it, especially if we're going the way we're going now.
There's that great line that the human race will be just a bedtime story to, you know, whoever.
Yeah. The human race will just be another myth, a bedtime story to tell their children. Mm-hmm. And that's that cosmic horror, right? We're talking about how one day we could blip out, be nothing, or because, I mean, right now, the only thing we know about consciousness is each other. You know, the fact that I'm alive is the only reason consciousness exists in my perspective, right? But so, yeah, anyway, this movie will drag you down those type of conversations. That's why it's fucking
into
great.
Insanity, into madness,
the cliffs of insanity. in the mouth of madness.
Just got it.
So I absolutely recommend it. Watch it with your family. I actually showed this to
Do you have children?
I showed it to a grumpy old, like, 55-year-old. He's like, oh, they haven't made good horror since the 70s. Oh, yeah. And I gave it to him. He's like, it gave me nightmares. Like, so this movie, it definitely works on the older generation that's used to just hearing dialogue and using that to build on, you know.
I like that you hang out with 50-year-olds.
Yeah. I worked with him.
Well, Carpenter has said that he, because the Wall Street Journal, like, interviewed him about this movie in, like, maybe it was the 20-year anniversary, 2014 maybe. And he said that, you know, he's very proud of it and he considers it one of his best movies. And he said, you know, as he goes to conventions, he talks to a lot of people and he says, you know, it's interesting because everybody likes something different. But he says, recently, people have been talking to me about this movie. So
it's just a different type of horror movie. You know, you get to think. You don't ever, you're like, oh, there's a guy with a knife. He's going to stab the chick with the boobs. Hope she takes a shower first. You know, you got to get clean before you get. So just, it's just nice to have a horror movie that makes you think. And I mean, fuck, how many horror movies can you really say that for? I love horror, but how many really make you fucking think?
That's what I was going to lump Carpenter in with George Romero. Is there, you know?
I think so.
Yeah.
But Romero's better at it.
They're artists working.
Carpenter's better.
Carpenter's able to sublimate his theme.
Well, his is more, his entertainment is more fun. First.
Yeah.
And a theme underneath.
Because as much as he has, like, I don't think Carpenter really wants to get into it. Like, an interview, like, he doesn't want to get political, which I respect.
Well, because he's like, I already did it. It's
Yeah. Don't talk to me about it.
Well, I think he does play dumb sometimes. He's just like, oh, I don't know, made a move. It's just like Stan Lee. If you listen to Stan Lee talk about anything, he plays it dumb because he's like, dude, he's staying neutral. He's not trying to piss anybody off. He's not trying to, you know, validate anybody's opinion. Just fuck it. I'm neutral. These people, I made a movie. That doesn't mean they need to know my political views, you know, which I do appreciate, you know.
Yeah.
Because we got nowadays, oh, I'm going to start talking about fucking Leo. That motherfucker can't shut up.
All right, so that's In the Mouth of Madness on the Saturday Night Freak Show. That means next week we're watching Sean's movie. Sean, what are we watching?
We are going to watch Candyman. Candyman.
Don't say it.
I thought it was five
Candyman.
Times. Candyman. It doesn't stop.
Be that's what we're watching next week.
There you go. He didn't have a mirror anyway. It wouldn't work. So
he's supposed to do it in a mirror.
Yeah,
he's supposed to do it in a mirror.
All right. Until next week, then, listeners. The basement is going dark.